Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Hear this, Johnny. You can't hear it.
I can't hear it.
Shh, it's Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Cowgirl in the Sand. Man, is it good. I almost can't even turn this off.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Shh, shh.
Hello, cowgirl.
Hello. This is amazing.
Is this place at your command?
Wow. Hi, everybody. I know I have to turn this off, but
can I stay?
Just want to keep listening to it. Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Four-Way Street, one of the greatest albums ever made. How about that? One of the greatest albums. How are you guys? I'm sitting here with Johnny Lieberman. We're in one of the many car hangers we have stashed around L.A., and our guest a little later on, Titus Welliver from Bosch, Amazon's Bosch. I thought I was a big fan, but no, Johnny's an even bigger fan. We're so excited to meet him. He's,
talk about Bosch legacy.
Yeah. He's got a new show, and he likes cars. I read an interview with him in Motor Trend from 2019. Isn't that your outfit?
I do work for them from time to time, yes.
How was your Thanksgiving? I hope it was great. I hope you ate a lot of food. We're back into a mini work week before we have Christmas. Today's show, by the way, sponsored by Harry's, sponsored by Decked, sponsored by CollectingCars.com, and Bob's Watches. I'm wearing a Bob's watch right now. Have you ever seen anything like this, Johnny?
A Daytona?
But this is a white gold.
Oh.
Any listener...
ooh.
Who's been listening to this show for a while,
yeah,
knows that I've always turned my nose up to the white gold watch.
Why is that?
Because it appears stainless steel, but it comes with a hefty yellow gold price tag.
But it weighs a lot.
This one, yes, but the point being, why spend five times the amount of money on a white gold watch that nobody knows is gold? Right?
Precious metal. It's for you. It's not for other people. It's for you. You know you're wearing gold without the flash.
Well, Bob's, here's the issue. There are a couple of watches that are so beautiful.
Mm.
Rolex, the new Submariner, yellow, white gold with a blue bezel, and this one right here, that you just can't get in stainless steel, so you have to...
Well, that's the funny thing with
Rolexes,
the
money.
Right, is that it used to be you couldn't even give away the precious metal ones because everyone just wanted the stainless, and now you know everything's up.
I hesitate to hype these because this one I have from Bob's.
It's nice.
I guess I'm doing a Bob's ad right now. I guess I'm just in it.
Why not?
The trusted way to buy or sell a pre-owned. Is this Bill Clinton?
Pre-owned luxury watch.
Why did I say it that way? Bob's has been around since 2010. Bob's, I've been a customer of theirs since 2010. They have one of the largest inventories on the internet, one of the largest watch trading sites, says the Wall Street Journal. I can tell you, seriously, I've been buying and selling watches through those guys for a while. You got to check them out. Now there's a site. There's a Bob's Watches Spike site. Bobswatches.com/spike. There, when you're going there right now, go ahead. Go there right now. Go ahead and check it out. I'll wait for you. That's right. Close the porn window. There you
Never.
Go. Okay. You're looking at watches that I have picked myself as things that would make me like you if you bought them. Bobswatches.com/spike. My personal choices. If you don't care for me, first of all, why are you listening? Right. But if you don't and you listen, I understand. Matt Farah has a page too, Smoking Tire. But go to mine. You know I have better taste than Matt Farah.
Of course.
And so I've been talking to not Bob, but Ashley, this nice young lady who controls the social media and everything else. She and I now talk a few times a week, and I pick watches. It's super fun. And I put them on that page, and everything there is going to be something that I've chosen. If you see something there and you question it, you let me know, because they've been instructed to only put my choices there. So now instead of DMing me, you can just go there and buy yourself something nice, and I'll try to remember to keep things under $20,000.
Oh, yeah, good luck. By the way, have you seen Back to Farah first, if you're done with the ad?
I'm not.
Ah!
Bobswatches.com/spike. Somewhere in there, there's a discount for $100. You got to check it out. But we're huge fans, and I'm happy to be part of the Bob's family. And this Blue Dial Daytona that I'm wearing, and I've always wanted to try it, is... It's killing me. It's silver and blue, and I'm dying right now.
Have you seen Farah's new Daytona that he got?
No.
He got a gold. He got rid of the Royal Oak, traded it. He got a gold Daytona with a Tahitian black pearl dial.
I did see that watch.
It is sick. And, like, I tried it on because we have the same size wrist, and I was like, God damn it. Because
there is nothing like a Daytona. They really are the greatest watches.
You're right, but I hate admitting
and
that.
And by the way, just get anyone you can afford, and hopefully, well, today the economy is crashing right now as we're sitting here.
That's right.
We're the Friday after
Blackest Friday, yeah.
Thanksgiving, and I was as I was overeating Bill's delicious thanks. I mean, it really was great. Bill Miller with a broken hip, who, by the way, showed up for work.
What?
2 days no. after surgery.
Are you serious?
I'll find the picture while we're talking here.
I believe you. I'm just like, how's that even possible?
His crew put everything together, and it was the most delicious meal that I'd ever had. Look, here you go. Look at this picture right here.
What he's a maniac. What's he doing?
So you know, not to impugn our friend Zuckerman here.
Impugn away.
Knows a lot about law. But when we all got this news that moments after Jerry and I left, Bill fell, broke his hip, and was in surgery, we were, you know, understandably upset that our friend was hurt and worrying about him, but mostly concerned with is our place going to stay open so we can get coffee and delicious things. We love you, Bill.
Yeah,
but
you know him because of the spot, the porch.
We have very few emotions.
So
after we pretend to have them for a little bit, then we just go, well, I hope my life is the same. And Zuckerman, who's strong on law, weak on medical. I've been trying to tell Jerry this. He goes, yeah, you're not going to see this guy again.
Right, right.
The cognitive decline of, he's out until at least February. And we were really bummed out, and we were depressed that might have been the very end of our fun with Bill after 20 years. Well, 2 days later.
I can't believe that. I'm looking at it. There's Bill on a walker in the kitchen. 2 days after a hip surgery.
And it's not even Zuckerman. My mom's staying with me for Thanksgiving. She's a nurse, retired. She said the same thing. And someone who's a very good friend of mine, who I'm writing with right now, is a medical doctor. He said the same thing as Zuckerman. This is the end.
No,
this
is done. My grandmother broke her hip, and she was dead like 6 weeks later. You know,
but look.
Just, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, And she didn't. Yeah. No, that's amazing. Good for Bill.
There he is.
Yeah. Never retire. That's the secret. Never retire.
Well, Bill, we wish you a speedy recovery, but apparently you've already recovered. I'm not even sure why we were talking about Thanksgiving and food. And then later Thanksgiving night, I think if you would turn to any of the news websites or Drudge, or there was this new variant that
the African variant.
The African doesn't have a snazzy name yet, so it's kind of harder. Yeah. But it
massive death variant.
Yeah, and. You know, that was about, so I'm passing out from tryptophan, you know, really affected by, because I had four pieces of pie and God, it's only 7:30 and I'm not going to be able to stay awake. This is bad. And I read this news story and I go, this looks pretty big. This looks like a big story. And then I went to bed.
Yeah.
I fell asleep. Yeah, yeah. This morning, stock market's down 1,000 points.
Yeah. Well, Bitcoin's down bigger. Yeah, it is. Everything's bad.
And nobody knows what. Who knows what's happening by Wednesday? Maybe this is all a footnote, and no one cares. But
look, the stock market is very reactionary, as you know. But whether you're saying like, wow, this new variant doesn't seem to be responding to the fucking three vaccines in your body.
Yes,
it's like, God damn it.
But you know, I was trying to explain it to my wife this morning, who doesn't want to hear me talk at all, so she had a very limited appetite for this theory, but I'm going to share it with you because you can't talk back, listeners, that when the stock market reacts to something, we all tend to take it seriously, right? There have been a lot of crazy developments with this pandemic. The stock market didn't do anything, save for the very beginning where it dove, right?
Yeah.
But then it just dove again, kind of freaks me out a little bit that I don't know why that I would listen to the stock market over my doctor, that this is something to pay attention to, but maybe here on Wednesday we shouldn't be bothering. Anyway, it's a long way of saying these Rolex Daytonas might be a lot cheaper.
It's a good investment. It's a nice hedge against inflation.
No. They might go down.
Oh, no.
Now, these are, I think, new. These white gold Daytonas were about 40 grand.
40.
Right? Wow. I don't think they've gone up too much.
Yeah, sadly, I want the platinum one, which has gone up.
Oh, the crazy blue one?
It's horribly it's like 160,000.
Here's a little advice for you future watch buyers in the Rolex department, because I remember when that watch came out and everybody went, oh God, that's ugly.
Oh,
buy that watch.
Yeah,
when someone goes, when it comes out, it's expensive and it's ugly, buy it.
Right.
Oh, that yellow gold with a green dial, that's all. Buy it. Buy it right now.
Wisdom from Spike.
Because that's the one that will be special later on.
That's right.
We got a great show. I think I mentioned Titus Welliver's going to be here any minute, and we're huge Bosch fans. If you haven't seen Bosch, go ahead and watch the 7 seasons right now on Amazon. We'll wait and then come back because you're going to want to dig in on that.
Pause. It's only 70 hours. Go ahead.
Johnny's favorite show. He's very excited. Usually I don't bring in a co-host for an interview, but Johnny, you're such a big fan. I want you to have a special day.
Thank you, Spike. I hope it's good. What if it's terrible? I hope it's good.
No, you're going to do great. I'll ask the lead questions. You do the follow up.
You have doubt I wouldn't do great?
Just don't try to kiss him. That's all I would say. Okay. But if you are going to kiss somebody, let's do another ad.
Okay.
Make sure you've shaved your face. You know, but I'm not sure where Blue Chew went. Don't start me on any tangents, but I've not heard from Blue Chew for a little while. I heard from a crazy guy DM me who started his own Blue Chew Instagram feed that's got 2 followers and DM me and said, I'm desperately trying to get in touch with Blue Chew. I read every message everybody sends, whether I respond or not.
Spike, I need my Blue Chew.
I went, why? He goes, I've got an idea for them. And I was like, yeah, okay. Let me connect you at the highest levels. Wow. But Blue Chew may already be gone.
Yeah.
Which if they are, then we can have our fun. You know what we'll do? We'll resurrect a Blue Chew ad and we'll go through the do's and don'ts.
Oh, the don'ts.
We could do that as soon as next week, as a matter of fact. I'll look at the schedule of ads.
I can feel him smiling from 3,000 miles away.
Anyways, this is about Harry. Let's face it, guys. Guys are hard to shop for. Whoever you're getting a gift for this season, you know, we want something exciting but practical. This is the year to give him Harry's. There's no better gift than their limited edition holiday shave sets featuring their award-winning Winston handle. Plus handsome and ready-to-gift packaging for an amazing unboxing moment. Books are great, tires are great, socks are great. But the guy in your life also deserves something he'll use every day for years to come. And this is true. I use my Harry's blade, and I like the way it feels in my hand, and I look forward to shaving.
I only shave twice a week, though, I'll be honest.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I don't have to dress up for an office.
Yeah, yeah.
But come around Sunday, I like to be presentable on my Zooms, and then I fall apart, and then maybe Thursday I'll do a shave.
Back when I shaved, this is ancient history.
How long is this story?
Go ahead. 2 seconds. But like I can grow a full beard in 24 hours. So like if I went.
Really?
Pretty much. But if I went 2 days, it was like a pain in the ass to shave. I mean, shave every day, it's easy. I find if you wait 3 days, it's like you're going through a lot of razors.
Lots of razors. That's why you want Harry's. Because Harry's is the gift that keeps on giving. Their sharp and long-lasting blades are still as low as $2 each.
How long is this story?
When it's finally time to replace. How often can you say you're also giving the gift of savings? For a limited time only, listeners of my show can get $5 off any holiday shave set at harrys.com/spike911. 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 This holiday season, you get $5 off free shipping. $5 off plus free shipping on any Harry's limited edition holiday shave set at harrys.com/spike911. I like the microsites. I like when they have the microsites. I get excited about being on a site.
I gotta check out this Bob's Watches one. This is news to me.
It's good. Yeah, yeah. I just picked the watches, but they sell so many watches. A lot of them disappeared really quickly. And then I was like, "Oh, is that me?" And they're just moving along, Harry.
Hey man, I'd like to be in the Rolex business too.
This is names. Yeah. We've got Bob,
Harry.
We've got Harry's. Who else in collecting cars? You drove in a pretty interesting car too,
yeah,
didn't you?
It's the Porsche 718 Cayman T.
The Cayman T.
T is the important part.
Is this a 2021? Is this a brand new model
or 22? Yeah.
Is there a T911 anymore?
There used to be, and there probably will be, but at the moment, I don't think there's a Carrera T.
Uh-huh.
So the way to think of it is, if you know what a Porsche GTS is, right? So that's like you take the S, you add all the performance stuff, and you lower the price, and you drop the ride height 20 millimeters. That's the GTS. So this, think of this as like the base engine GTS, but it's just a T. So it's the 300 horsepower, the 2 liter, four cylinder turbo. So it's the engine that nobody likes, but it's got every performance option. It's lower 20 millimeters. And despite having a charmless sounding engine, it's a very effective engine, a lot of torque, light car, really fun. I've really been enjoying it. I haven't done too much with it. I did get to drive it up Angeles Crest, last week. And, it's quite good. It's got a manual, and 6-speed manual, and it's just, yeah, it's a great car. It's night. You couldn't be more different than like a GT3, because it's just not hardcore. It's a fairly compliant suspension. It's not screaming. You know, it's turbocharged, but it's so much nicer to like jump on the freeway in this thing. And like, if you have to open a bottle of water, like it's not an event, you know, it's just a regular car.
Right. Right.
You know, but it does, because it's a T, it does handle better than a base Cayman. So it's a nice thing. I don't know what this one costs, but I spec'd one on the configurator the way I wanted. It was 102,000.
102?
Well, I spec'd one. I get every option, but you know, it's a base Cayman's like, I think I want to say like 69,000 these days. For the T, I should look it up, but you know, it's probably like a $10,000 option.
Right,
you get a
right.
lot of stuff. You get all the, you know, Porsche performance stuff, sport chrono, everything's included. And then it has a couple unique things like the stripes and the headlights and taillights, and it's lowered. So it's cool. It's cool.
Do these become rare? You know, people were asking all the time about those 911 Ts, and are they collectible? And are, you know,
that is this, one is that.
Why is it collectible?
That's because a special car. You know, that was one of those ones where, you know, if you talk to someone at Porsche, you're like, you did something else to that car, didn't you? And they kind of smile at you like, no, Via wouldn't do anything that we didn't say we did, you know. But it's like, it's a special car. They breathe some kind of magic onto that thing. It was just really cool.
How many of them are out there, do you know?
It was regular production, so I don't know. Not that many.
I don't see them a lot. I don't see them for sale a lot. I don't see them on the road a lot.
Yeah, there probably wasn't that many because, if you're spending, you know, they were about $100,000. And so if you're going to spend $100,000 on 911, just get the S. But it was but it was better than the S. It was like, it was a really good car. I went on a big road trip with some buddies one time, and like thing just rocked. Like, I had two guys in GT3s, one guy in a McLaren 720S, and it just rocked. It had no problem hanging with those things. So it was a very cool car.
Wow. Yeah.
So would you say that, would you recommend that then if someone was thinking about getting something collectible?
I don't know about value, but driving experience wise, like, I would love to have a Carrera T, the 991.2 Carrera T. It's just one of those, you know, the 991 was such a, like, rich generation of 911. Like, there's so many good versions of it, you know, and it, but it's one of the special ones. Top 12 out of 29. Definitely top 12 material.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Wow. I think it was cool. It was cool.
It was pretty exciting having Ferdy Porsche on last week, wasn't it? I keep going back to this ice race stuff and looking at the pictures. I know I would be wildly uncomfortable and cold and not want to make the trip for it. But it looks like so much fun.
I'm going. I've already made arrangements.
You did?
Yeah. I'm going.
Who did you call?
I called Porsche.
And who?
My friend at Porsche. I said, don't you think a Targa on spike tires would be so cool?
Right.
Put the top down and I'll just, you know, bundle
did you,
up.
Did you see the spike tires from the 356 on the wall? That's from the Swedish ice racer.
Yeah.
With some SCR art.
But I've been tripping out about Ferdy, because I realize, like, you know, he's the great grandson. I know 100 times more about his great grandfather than either of my great grandfather, any of my great grand, anybody in my family. Like, it's crazy.
There's no way he's not going to be more involved in the car company after this.
They got to pull him in. Yeah.
Yeah. After that, right?
Pull him in. Yeah. He can build new showrooms for Porsche or something. I mean, something.
Yeah. Yeah. Let him go do his car, find his own way for a little while, and then.
Come back in. Yeah. He's turning 30 soon. He's mature enough. Right? He's sowed the wild oats.
Ferdy, don't fight it. Come on. This is a unique opportunity. Exploit it. Explode it. And then bring us into it. Yeah. Right?
We just want allocations.
Look, I love Pat Dempsey. I consider him a Porsche friend, but I deserve more cars than he does. I'm sorry. If you need a car, collecting cars is who you want. Their recent global auction highlights are massive. Last week, they sold 5 Ferraris, fetching over $1.3 million in total. Listen to this. 2005 Black Ferrari 612, $56,000. 1991 Ferrari Testarossa, $110,000. 2000 Ferrari 550 Maranello, $135,000. These all seem like deals. 2015 Giallo Modena Ferrari 458 Speciale, 2,000 miles, $358,000. It's not such a deal. Great car, good price. And a 2015 Giallo Modena Ferrari 458 Speciale a Puerta.
Ooh.
With only 163 miles.
Oh, that was the million.
That went for $700,000.
Yeah. God.
Wow, that's a lot of money for a 458.
Yeah, but that Testarossa, it's a Speciale, but that Testarossa, that sounds like an actual kind of 110?
Yeah.
91 Testarossa? That's a sweet car.
Have you driven those cars? I've driven them. Yeah, they're nice. Yeah.
They're much better than you would suspect based on other stuff from 1991.
Plus the ex-Jensen Button F1 champion Seal Gray Porsche Carrera GT. Jensen Button selling more cars than me and Zuckerman. He's really he likes to get them out the door. Also, Maritime Blue 2019 Porsche 911 991 Speedster. Ooh, that's nice.
That is very nice.
Paint to sample. I think these are up right now in a willow green. 2011 Porsche 911 997.2 GT3 RS with a Shark's Forks 4.1.
Okay. Have you driven a big Shark Works motor?
No.
Okay.
I talked to the Shark Works guys, but I've not driven their stuff.
But listen to me. The people on the listen to the podcast. Shark Works 4.1.
How long is the story?
It just, you have a GT3 RS that suddenly has the torque of a 7-liter Chevy engine. It's insane. It just radically transforms the car. It's like, it's just awesome. It's some of my favorite Porsches are those 997s with the big motors. It's like 480 pound-feet of torque, 500 horsepower. They're awesome. Awesome.
Visit CollectingCars.com. Check out their U.S.-based and global current and coming soon auctions. Bidders from over 90-plus countries. Head over to CollectingCars.com. Sign up for their daily email. Collecting Cars. Why sell your supercar anywhere else? No ordinary auction, no ordinary cars. Plus Chris Harris.
How much is that Sharkworks car?
That's up. It is yet to be determined.
That's a good one.
What else do we have to talk about? Titus isn't here yet.
He's not here yet.
He's going to be here in... he just texted. He's going to be here in...
Well, did you have a wonderful Thanksgiving? Was it everything you dreamed of?
Yeah.
Nice.
It was fine. It was hot. It was really nice and hot, but I didn't get to smoke a cigar, which is I was going to suggest today that we smoke cigars, and I forgot.
I had a cigar.
You did?
I had the best Thanksgiving of my life.
Wow.
Well, most of my family's dead.
Yes.
So
That's what makes it great.
And so it was all friends, people I really like, and my little 4-year-old like couldn't hang, so he went inside, and the wife followed him in. So suddenly it was just like great food and wine, and we had a cigar and we had whiskey. And
did he poop on the floor?
No,
or do
nothing
anything?
Like that. No, no, only at Zuckerman's. No, he was great. it was like the best Thanksgiving I think I've ever had. It was incredible.
Really?
Yeah. And then the weirdest thing was my friend Ivar. He showed up with a ham. He had this big ham. And I'm like, where'd you get a ham? And he got it at Nick's Diner, which is like...
Oh, boy.
What's that?
That's a big alert. It's a fire alert. Okay, well...
You see a fire?
Maybe it was your ham. Hold
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the ham. You got to... Yeah.
Go ahead. Talk about your ham.
Well, it's a place that Titus Welliver eats at when he's playing Harry Bosch, and yeah, Nick gave us 7 pounds of ham, and it was absolutely delicious. So, super good Thanksgiving. I don't know, it was the opposite of what we talked about last week. I just enjoyed myself immensely. Never had that before. Usually, it's just like
what,
misery.
Ham?
No, I've had ham.
You ate ham.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, this a story about a Jew eating ham? Is that what this was about?
We brought up my grandma. This is funny. When my grandma died, we were cleaning out her fridge, and she kept, like, secretly kept ham, like sliced cheap ham in the back of the fridge, like hid it from us.
Oh, God.
My mom's like, oh, yeah, she's always liked ham.
Hey, you know, what the fuck?
Is it Zuckerman?
Oh, no, this is my phone now. Oh, these were iPhone alerts. That's what these were. Oh, Your phone came across first.
For what?
It's a silver alert.
What does that mean?
A missing endangered elderly man.
Oh, it's Zuckerman.
I don't know where I am.
Help me. Help me, Spike.
Oh, that's what that was. So okay. That's usually... Oh. The last time I heard that, it was the fires. You got to get out of your neighborhood. But now there's a silver alert. That's
Spike,
hilarious.
I'm lost. I need a Porsche quick.
God, really? A lost old man gets that level of service here in LA?
I've never heard of silver alert. That's a new one.
Wow. Yeah, we had one the other day.
Okay.
But see, look, this is the imperfection of all this stuff. I can open it, and it just goes to the CHP alert Twitter feed, but there's no sign. Oh, there it is. Okay, 4 minutes ago. This nice old lady seems to be missing. Nellie, look at, she's 90, 4'10", 75 pounds, at risk and missing. All right, well, there she is.
I mean, she looks, yeah.
All right, we'll try. Hopefully they'll find Nellie. I was going to tell you, you know, I've made this decision in my mind to start transitioning out of the Land Rover into the Rivian.
Yes.
And then my Land Rover 2 days ago updated, you know, and usually that means nothing, right?
It's just
a Land Rover update. Who cares?
Sure.
The next day, I stepped into my Land Rover Defender and I had wireless CarPlay. The update was a wireless update, which I know now is in most cars, but it hadn't been in the Defender.
Right.
And it was one of those funny, like, nothing worked the whole drive, and I'm cursing the truck out, and then suddenly everything just went bloop, and it all worked perfectly. And now I'm having a nice experience.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And because you know my whole saga with the rack, half of it's made up. Like, I'm perfectly happy without the rack.
Sticky.
I do want a rack, but I don't want a rack.
You don't
actually
want a rack. Yeah,
there's, like, I know I don't.
Yeah.
We were just talking about it, but... When I've never had an improvement like that in a car other than the Tesla, like where they actually gave me something that's useful in this update.
So all other car makers are waking up to the fact that like customers really love.
Yeah.
I've already paid my money and it gets better.
And it got better.
Yeah.
It got better.
It's a crazy thing. Yeah, they all can do it. Just none of them ever thought to do it before.
Can do it, buddy.
But it's another way that Tesla's kind of leading the industry around by its nose, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's cool. But that said, that Rivian...
Well, I'm going to drive it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it first. Yeah. I'm going to drive it, and I'm going to let you let them know, and then I may make that switch. I'm at my one-year anniversary rack list in my Defender.
Is it you leased it?
This car? Yeah, but I can jump out of it.
Oh, nice.
Already did the work. You know, they're selling so high over sticker that you just sell the car and pay everything off.
Right, right, right.
You know, so it can happen, but... You know, the second you start thinking about this stuff, you start to doubt yourself and feel sad.
Have you heard from Land Rover? Because you did publicly announce on Instagram. This is the moment.
I don't think they give a shit about me or this podcast. And it is weird. And they used to.
It's their market.
I know.
Like, who like, as a percentage of an audience, is going to own more Range Rovers? Like, the Spikes Car Radio audience or anyone else?
We have such a great audience that it's...
Or Range Rover ownership.
That's engaged.
Yeah.
And they listen, and we're all similarly afflicted or what we like and what we obsess about. And that, you know, I've heard from different advertisers before, you know, we gave you an ad and we gave this other ad to this YouTuber who has 10 million views. He goes, you had more engagement than he did.
Sure.
Because we're just a small focused group of nut jobs.
Yeah. But like nut jobs that buy Range Rovers and Land Rovers. Yeah,
yes.
It's that's weird.
And I don't know. I've always been a lucky person. Maybe I'm just being spared the disappointment of the whistling rack and not being able to get in parking garages. But,
yeah, the noise is crazy.
Yeah, I do enjoy the truck, and I'm using it right now. But all right, last ad before Titus gets here. I hear he's pulling in. I'm hearing it right now. So let's bang this out of the way, and then no more ads after this. I promise. I apologize for our success. I won't do more than four after this.
Yeah,
I promise.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this. I think this ad is something, a product that you decked. This is a product that you're involved in. But let me read the ad and you can comment on it.
Yes, yes.
But just know I've done none of the things in the ad.
Okay.
But you have. Maybe. A couple years ago, I went to a buddy's place to catch a football game. We had a great time hanging out. I didn't even think about the stuff I left in the back of my truck. It snowed hard, and by the time I left, my stuff was ruined. I'd put my stuff in the back of the pickup, in back of the truck. I was out a couple $100 for that gear. It sucked. I thought to myself, never again. That's why I got decked. The decked drawer system. Now, when they said they were going to send one of these over, I said, I don't have my pickup truck yet. But you do, right? Did you get your decked? Do you have a decked?
That's a funny story, Spike.
Drawer system.
That's a funny story. So, yes, I have a over 200-pound box in my garage that I got in there by myself.
What pickup truck do you have?
I have a TRX, TRX.
Okay.
It's mine for a year. However, it got destroyed when we took it across country with the Rivian. Because of supply chain and chip shortage and blah, 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 many of the parts are just back ordered. So it doesn't have a windshield at the moment.
The truck.
So you haven't
installed it yet.
Yes, but they sent me a t-shirt and I wore the t-shirt. It was very nice.
Well, here's what Decked is. They keep your stuff safe from rain, ice, and snow. Decked makes organizing and accessing everything you need so much easier. Each of Decked's two full bed-length drawers can carry up to 200 pounds of whatever you got. The drawers roll out waist high, giving you easy access to your organized tools and gear. The deck drawer system keeps your gear secure. If your tailgate is locked, you can't open the drawers and you can't remove the system. Even the drawers have locks for added security and peace of mind. Decked is 100% made in the USA and backed by a lifetime, no-hassle warranty with second-to-none customer service, ready to answer all your questions. And we love it. Johnny loves it. I love it. Getting decked was the best thing Johnny ever did for his truck, especially this time of year with winter approaching. Protect your stuff like Johnny does. Get your decked drawer system at deck.com/spike911. Deck.com/spike911, and you're going to get free shipping. That's decked.com, deckedcom/spike911 for free shipping on your decked drawer system. And it being a couple hundred pounds, that free shipping is valuable, right?
Yeah, just make sure you don't live on my street, because I'd run down to the bottom and grab it. Luckily, I had a miniature pickup truck, but still, it's very heavy. But we should rewrite this ad copy LA version, because we don't have, like, winter. You know, like, all my stuff got stolen out of the back.
Shut up, Johnny.
Oh, come on.
Deck.com/Spike911. Let's bring in Titus Welliver.
We're going to talk about your history of cars and your love
of
cars.
By the way, I'm like a ridiculous Bosch fan.
Stop. Let's do this on the show.
Okay.
Just here we go. Ready? Ready? Stop.
If I start freaking out.
Don't worry. I have no issues about that, because I'm the same way. Okay. Fucking love making the show, and I love the books.
So. If you're listening right now, what you're listening to is Johnny Lieberman fangirling over Titus Welliver. Titus, very nice to meet you.
Nice to be, why you got to emasculate him, man? Why does he got to be fangirling?
That's his job. That's what he does. Don't worry. It's okay.
But he's not the only fan. I'm also a huge fan. I'm not even sure how this came about. Like, you know, it was right about, I came to the show late, and then I lost my mind. Like, I hit this show in the pandemic skids with I've Got Nothing to Do, and I went, holy hell, there's 7 seasons of this, and it's awesome. So I was flying through it when, out of the blue, I thought you had some connection to these guys.
I posted a photo of, there was like a crazy supermoon.
Oh, yeah.
And so season 7 had dropped, and I had watched 3 episodes in a row, and somebody was like, go outside and look at the moon. And I'm like, moon's pretty good, but I'm going to get back to Bosch season 7. And then Mark, your producer,
yeah,
I guess,
Mark Douglas.
I didn't know, but he followed me on Instagram, Power of Social Media, and he's like, you want to come down to the set? Like, you know, like, we'd love to have you on the new show. And I was like, you know, all caps, like, ah!
Fangirl.
Oh, yeah. Look, real quick, I just got to say it. I've seen seasons 1 through 5 4 times. I've seen season 6 3 times. And I'm working my way through season 7 for the second time. And I've read all the books. And this is going to be embarrassing. I've listened to all the books, especially the ones that you read.
Thank you, brother. Have you read the new one?
I just finished it. I flew to Italy, and
it's my favorite book. It's weird because
you're not in it.
I'm not. Yeah. I'm barely in it. I mean, I did like this time. Typically, when we do the Bosch Ballard books, Christine Lakin does the Ballard chapters. I read the Bosch chapters. And this time, I just read the Bosch dialogue. People always ask me, oh, what's your favorite Bosch book? Which one is it? And look, I love them all. They all have, you know, a kind of emotional attachment to a certain degree. But interestingly enough, I find that as Bosch progresses in age, he never really changes. And that's the beautiful thing about that character, is he evolves, but only to a certain degree and on his own terms, which you kind of got to dig.
Mm-hmm.
But as he becomes older, and we're kind of getting into that now in the new show, with that kind of vulnerability, and also with him no longer part of LAPD, that vulnerability makes him really dangerous, because he's a guy who kind of operates, you know, with his own metronome anyway, in the way that he navigates things. So now you put him outside of, he doesn't have a badge, he doesn't get, you know, if he needs to get something, information, he's got to finagle, and or there's no search warrant, you know, he's picking somebody's lock. So that became, for me, reading the books, because that's when I started doing the audiobooks, was when Bosch left the force permanently and became, you know, working as a PI, but also working for San Fernando as a cold case volunteer detective. I just think that here's this cat that's, you know, of advanced age in the book universe, and he's still the same guy. Even though his bones creak and he's got fucking cancer and he's dealing with all this stuff, he's still, you have to admire, he doesn't give a shit. I mean,
it is funny in the books how he's like 90 at this point with cancer, but he's still
old Harry.
Yeah, he's still a badass, but yeah.
He is a badass, I know. Well, I didn't even know it was based on a book. My neighbor Stacy Shulman is like, you're watching Bosch? I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen a guy's face on the Amazon app. I haven't pressed the button yet, but I keep hearing about this thing. And what I loved, I mean, it's aside from
you know, L.A. noir detective fiction, which I love, and a character that's going to chase down a case that nobody else wants and sees the truth, is a little bit, is just this, the history of L.A. and the locations. And
the restaurants.
I'll tell you what, the first thing that came to mind was, who is your casting director? Because I think the casting on the show is so good.
Yeah.
In that it, they were all faces that I really hadn't seen before, including yours, because I hadn't seen Deadwood, but that they all looked like legitimate LAPD.
Yeah, and or real people.
I and mean, or real people, right.
Laura Schiff was our and who also did Mad Men. And, you know,
right.
And look, there are. They just had a gift. A, what was really kind of interesting about it was, and this is a conversation we had very early on, after they had cast me in the pilot, and we kind of had the powwow, and they were saying to me, what is it that you want or need, you know, just sort of artistically and just sort of overall? And I said, I just want to create an environment where people can come and do their best possible work.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because I've been a hired gun. And I know I've guessed it on every fucking show, yeah, in the, you know, short of something on Nickelodeon. And I know what it's like to come into an environment where it's become almost oddly corporate and so overly controlled that there's no space. You kind of come in, you hit your mark, and you say, and you're, you know, ultimately kind of an automaton. And I said, and I want us to reach out and cast. Just cast great actors. I don't care. We don't need to stunt cast and try to find the biggest name. Let's find. And so what happened was it became an actor's show. And I know what that's like, when you see something and you go and you call your agent or your manager and you go, I want to do something on that show. Just please contact the producers. Just let them know that I'm a fan. And they started to come out of the woodwork. And then some of them became recurring characters. This season, two of my acting heroes, we got to bring on the show, William Devane, and
I've worked with him before.
Yeah, and yeah. he's and Bill is just
he's amazing.
He's the coolest cat.
He goes like this. This is my Devane. Yeah. He goes, "Hey, Spike." He goes, "This character, what was he doing on Thanksgiving in 1968?" I go, "What?" "This is my process." I'm like, I don't know how to access your process. I imagine on a drama, he's home. And, it, you know.
Well,
so,
yeah.
And we should tell everybody what you're talking about. Because Bosch,
right,
this ended season 7,
yeah,
right? And now there's a new series that's Amazon, IMDb.com, right?
IMDb TV, yeah.
Right, and that's part of Amazon.
And it's called Bosch Legacy.
And what can you tell us about that series, just to set that up?
I can tell you the entire storyline and destroy it for everyone.
Nice, please.
Yeah. But at the end of season,
I'll speak slowly.
At the end of season 7, you were thinking about being a private investigator.
Yeah. So Harry, he walks away.
Right.
Hands in his badge. He can't do it anymore because what it's been forcing him to do is to compromise. Not he refuses to compromise his moral compass. So you got to kind of dig a guy who eventually says, no matter what I do, I can't affect any kind of real change because there's too many obstacles. There's politics, there's corruption, and I'm not willing to play that game. And so he steps away from the thing that's ultimately his life force and, you know, is the center of his being, technically. So that there's a that little Easter egg towards the end where he is filling out his application to be a private eye. So our show, the new show, Bosch Legacy, kicks in about a year or so after that. And the characters that carried over from the original series were Madison Lintz's character, mm-hmm, Maddie Bosch, and Mimi Rogers' character, Honey Chandler. So we kind of pick up where they are. And it's interesting because really, I guess if you had to sort of lay it out to where these characters are, they're three sort of damaged characters. Maddie's damaged in her own way because of loss and all of that, but she's finally taken a stand and made a decision to do what she wants to do, which is to be a cop. But she's walking in the shadow of her father, who casts a very long shadow and is not necessarily, because he was a doer or an earner, he stepped on a lot of toes and pissed a lot of people off, but he was also the sort of premier homicide closer in LAPD. Mm-hmm. So he's a badass. So there's that weird dichotomy that she's going to kind of tiptoe through, but she's very much her own person. And there's Harry's anxiety about her being a cop. But we made the very, very, I think, sound choice to not make it be a thing where Harry, she's under Harry's tutelage. We just didn't do that because I said, oh, my God, that's going to be, that's too father knows best. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. They, you know, they've finally come to an interesting place in their relationship.
And she's, I mean, if I mean she's just developed as a character over the yeah. seven seasons of the original show. Like, she became so interesting right around season 5, 6, you yeah. know, like, and a terrific actor.
Yeah. You know? Well, she, I mean, she's kind of, you know, for me as an actor, to watch another actor at that age evolve artistically and intellectually.
Because it can go either way.
Yeah.
And it went really well.
So is the new show like a Rockford Files? Do you live down at the beach in a trailer and have a cool Firebird? And
well, you know what?
I could, what kind of cases is Bosch handling in Legacy?
I've got to be, I have to be careful because I don't want to give away anything. I mean, he's still the same guy, but what's...
But you understand, I mean, without giving away too much, what... Is he doing personal injury cases? Is he chasing down?
Yeah. Yeah, he's working for Larry H. Parker.
Working for Zuckerman.
Working yeah. for our guy Zuckerman, like wives that are cheating on husbands. Or does it, you know, and maybe you can't say, but or does it veer into hardcore crimes that you're investigating?
Well, he does. I mean, what he's been ostensibly doing is exactly that. He's doing, you know, snooping around on people in divorce cases.
Right, right.
Doing background checks and stuff, which frankly, I don't want to say it's beneath him because everyone has that need.
But it's right. beneath him.
But it's kind of beneath him.
Yeah.
And so we kind of find him, you know, content
yes.
doing what he's doing. But there's a, in an odd way, it's this sort of, it's almost like a, he's emasculated himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like this sort of like, seppuku, right? He's committed this ritualistic kind of male suicide, and you just said there's an underlying sense of frustration, and he's kind of lost in a way because he's doing this stuff and he's doing it well, but it's just it's not doing it. And then you've got Maddie, who's, you know, doing the cop thing, and she's very busy. And then you have Honey Chandler, who is a shell of her former self.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she almost died. You know, the assassin almost took her out, and she is. And I have to say, I mean, Mimi's a great actor. She's been great all the time on the show, and certainly throughout her career. But there's work that she's doing this season on this new show that's kind of mind blowing. She's fractured, and there's the veneer of a character that's trying to struggle and get through this thing. And she's trying to kind of engage Harry, and Harry's going, I'm not fucking working with you. You know, we have our thing. We have our own contract. But a thing kind of lands in his lap. And if you've read the books, there's a character named Whitney Vance, who's this billionaire guy who's from this aviation family, and is played by the great.
Such a
we
good
got
book.
Bill Main to come in.
Which
about.
One? I'm going to get it right now. You must just be in heaven right now, Johnny.
I'm plotting.
Are you
I'm
so happy?
Yeah,
look what's happening right here.
I'm keeping my mouth shut, but I have like no, 80 you're doing. Questions.
I know. Go ahead. This is the time.
Okay, when does
we do? We will have to talk about cars because he's here to talk about cars. But
when does the new show come out? When can we?
I think they were saying April, but I don't want to give anyone a bad date.
Q2.
I think that's yeah.
in car terms.
What is this book you were just talking about? Because I do need something to read right now.
I think it was the second to last book.
Yeah.
The names are always like, you know, the Dark Knights,
okay.
Hours.
The Crossing. And
but an aviation guy.
Yeah.
That's what I have to track down.
Yeah, it's like Howard S. Hughes's L.A., yeah. Pasadena, San Marino, Old Money, Danger.
And it's played by Bill Devane.
Oh, there you go, our guy.
And so
he's the greatest.
Rolling Thunder.
Wait, how old is Bill Devane right now? Because when I was working with him, he was up
if
there.
If you say, Bill, how old are you? You go, I'm older than fucking dirt.
What was dirt doing on this day in 1946? I don't know, Bill. I don't know.
He was such a joy to be with. It was this failed pilot that we did it was actually a series with Michael Richards after Seinfeld that he was on.
Really?
But we loved him on set. He was so much fun to work with.
Well, he's the consummate pro.
And yeah.
If you run, through the roster of films and stuff, which are many, but Rolling Thunder is a film that never really got the credit that it sort of deserved, mm-hmm. because it was, it's Paul Schrader wrote the script, and it's with Tommy Lee Jones, and it's a revenge flick. People always go, oh, the one where he has a hook on his hand, but and it's not that it's a malign film. It's just, unless you're a cinephile or a crazy film nerd, it might have escaped your radar. But for me, I always thought that his performance in that, there's a stillness in his performance. It was kind of reminiscent of McQueen and some of the other things. Just never fucking comments on anything. And even as a kid, I grasped what I was seeing. So, and ironically, and so I bought a place up in Topanga recently, and it's kind of a ranch. I decided, and I named it Rolling Thunder. So cut to,
wow.
And I've got Rolling Thunder. I have posters all over my house. Rolling Thunder. So they call me up. We're talking about Vance, and we're bandying names about, and they say, what about William Devane? So I lose my shit and I go, if you can get Bill Devane, I'll go to his house, knock on the door, and I'll fucking beg him.
Yeah.
And they go, well, let's just put a feeler out. He accepts the offer. He comes in. And I have to say, it's one of those things where, we are ostensibly colleagues. We're both working at the same level, but it's Bill Devane.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to, muster, keep my shit together.
You're Johnny. You're Johnny Lieberman here. Well,
can I redirect for a second? Just speaking of great actors, great performances from Bosch, I just can't let this interview end without mentioning this. Lance Hendrick, like,
what does that mean, Lance Hendrick?
He was Chief
Lance Reddick. He plays
Reddick. I'm sorry, Reddick.
He plays Chief Irvin.
Sorry.
Oh, okay,
Chief Irvin. Sorry.
Right. Said the robotic guy. It's just.
Well, but I mean,
from The Wire,
like when you were on Deadwood, right? You had to be in scenes with Ian McShane,
yeah, which is very difficult.
And like, I mean, he was,
yeah.
And but I feel, you own Bosch, you are Bosch. But like, I mean, he's a force of nature on that show. Well, like, what's that like? Because I know I follow him on Instagram. I see he's kind of a goofy guy who reads
that's
poetry.
That's the great.
And like, he's into comics and stuff.
Yeah, 100. I literally was just having this conversation with my nephew, Langston Fishburne, yesterday, who's also an actor. He's a budding actor. But he, and we all, Lance and I have known each other for 25 years, at least. We did a series together in the Wayback Machine, but the great myth about Lance, because of the nature of his presence and a lot of the characters that he plays, is he's got to be a guy who's not approachable,
right?
Humorless,
right?
Maybe a little angry and maybe a little crazy. Lance Reddick, and I'm not really snatching the covers off of him. He is, like myself, is a gigantic nerd.
Yeah.
He is. When we would be at work together, they go, what do you guys talk about? You must be talking about like Shakespeare, a couple of Yale characters around. And I go, no, we talk about Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu. we talk about comic books.
Yeah.
We talk about comic artists. We talk about films that we love. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of Star Trek.
Yeah.
When Jerry Ryan came on to do the show, Lance lost his shit. And he knew she was on set. We were all working on the same day. And I said, she's here. And he, what do you mean? I said, she's in hair and makeup. Come on, let's go say hi. oh, I don't know. I said, Lance, are you serious? Well, you know, 7 or 9. I went, Lance, come on. We go in the trailer, and Jerry, you know, she gets out of her seat, and, hey, so nice to meet you. And Lance looks like someone's injected him with some sort of freeze ray or something. He's stock still, and he's blushing.
Oh.
And he's a little bit tremulous. He's very, look, the work that we got, we always would build in an additional 25 to 30 minutes whenever Lance and I did scenes together, because he and I work in a very similar way. But those scenes we knew were kind of emblematic of, in an overall way, to what the show is about, which was the cop on the ground versus the cop who's become the politician.
Right, right.
And that it was really important, A, to sort of solidify the nature of that relationship, and considering the history that they had, in that, you know, Irving's son is murdered, and who does he go to? The guy that he's constantly going, this guy is a pebble in my shoe, mm-hmm. but he's a closer.
Right.
And so, I mean, what a nuanced, really interesting relationship for two actors to get to play. So we really worked the shit out of it.
Such a treat to watch. I mean, like, because, you know, on the show, you know, Chief is the only one that can bully Bosch. Nobody else can even say anything to him, really. He'll beat everyone else down. But, like, I mean, that last scene with the motherfucker out.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, was that improvised?
Well, that,
because that, like...
Because we would do stuff with each other on close-ups, because it's interesting. And that was the dynamic of the whole show. It was always about trying to work harder for the person that was on camera. And everyone did that for each other. So when you have that, and it sounds Marxist in its concept, but when you have actors that are genuinely working to service the other actor, you're going to get the best possible performance. But if you've got an asshole who's sitting there who's concerned about their hair and their makeup, and all they're doing is waiting for their next line because they can't act for shit, and their performance is going to be fixed and editorial, then you've got that level of selfishness just makes for nothing but a bad time.
Right.
But that was something that was throughout the entire production of that show and continues to be, people that are working, which is how it's supposed to be. And Lance, I was saying some pretty funky stuff to him off camera. And that came out of, and I don't remember precisely what it was I said,
right,
but I said something to him along the lines of, you're a fucking sellout, or, you know, you're a company right. man or something. And he went, motherfucker, get out.
Oh, yeah.
It was
That's
just
the
out.
Moment.
It was just
yeah,
the
yeah.
fuck out. It was, and, it was just.
Before we leave Bosch, because we have to move on to cars. I do have one very important question. You wore a Rolex Submariner.
Yeah.
In the show.
Yeah.
Which also, like, you caught my attention right away. Where did that come from? Was that you? Was yeah. that Titus?
Well, I've had Rolexes in my life. I've always loved the Submariner. But Bosch is a former Special Forces guy.
Right.
And I've been around a lot of Special Forces and SEAL team guys. And particularly in the era of Vietnam, Rolexes, guys would go on Liberty, and they would go to Hong Kong, or they'd be in Bangkok, and they were falling off of trucks, Rolexes. They weren't knockoffs.
Right.
They were real Rolexes. And in that era, a lot, particularly the SF guys, were buying those subs because they were black market.
Mm-hmm.
And so that became a thing. And I thought, that would be because I always say, when people go, well, Harry's a cop, I go, no, first and foremost, Harry is a former Green Beret. He's a former SF guy. He doesn't move like a cop. He doesn't hold a weapon like a cop. He's an operator first and foremost, and you can't take that out of him. And the Rolex was just a cool, that was, you know,
But was it a new Rolex or was it
old? No, it was an older Rolex. And so we were operating on the assumption that Bosch probably got that when he was in SF, when he was in his 20s.
Right.
And then the...
But that is a nice callback for the fans of the books, because in the books, he's much older. He was in Vietnam, not in Desert Storm.
I thought I missed an episode.
Because the thing was, I went, do we do the black band or do we do the Pepsi band?
Right, right.
Because I remember when my uncle came back from Vietnam.
The Bezel, you mean, not the band.
Yeah, the Bezel, rather.
Yeah.
He had a Pepsi
Bezel
on his.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always sort of thought that was, you know, but the one I had was black. And I thought, no, maybe in Bosch's case, because he's such a hangback guy, that any kind of color would draw attention.
So yes.
He'd have a black
A sniper could see it.
So we chose that. And I also wanted him to have, you know, most LAPD guys carry Glocks. They carry the nines or the Berettas. And I went, no, he's an SF guy.
1911.
It's got to be a 1911.
Yeah.
Some of those guys, it's 1911. So we
I wondered about that. Okay.
Do you have trouble not carrying that character into your real life? Are you like that at all in real life?
No, not at all.
You're not one of these like Godfather actors who then walks off and,
No.
It's me.
Because you don't look like Bob, but I'm Irish.
You're sitting across from us right now. You're tatted up. You're just like one of us. Yeah, I don't see that happening. Let's talk about the cars. Let's get into your car history, man. Because as we were diving into you and Johnny was connecting with your staff, we were hearing about what a car fan you were. And I pulled up this old Motor Trend article, not even that old, a few years ago, where you were quoted as saying, everybody in my family, we are very car-centric family. My dad had Alfa Romeos, had so many vehicles. It was ridiculous. He also had old surplus military cars. Is that where this car thing began for you? What was that like? Tell us what was going on in your house there.
Well, my dad was a car guy. I remember very, very early. I remember when I was a little kid, he had Austin Healey's and Alphas, but then would have like an old Ford pickup truck. So he had these practical vehicles.
And where was this? Connecticut?
This was in Connecticut and in Philadelphia and in New York and in Maine. So my first driving experience was my dad had gone to town. I don't know why he thought it was okay to leave my older brother and I alone. I was probably six. And he took the truck and he went into town. We were summering at our we were at our place in Maine. Our father takes the pickup truck into town to do something and leaves the Alpha at the house with my brother and I. So upon his return, he's coming up the dirt road. It was like you can't even call it a driveway. It was an old logging road that was my dad's driveway. It was over a mile and a half to any asphalt road. And as he's pulling up to park the truck by the barn, he sees his Alpha coming up the road with my older brother, who was 12. I was six. He's barely looking over the wheel, and he's coming up in the Alpha. Of course, my father flips out. And what we were doing was we'd figured it out. I was crouched in a ball on the floor, and I was operating the clutch and the brake and the accelerator with my hands. My brother was steering and was shifting the gears.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I caught an ass whipping behind that. Not really. More so my brother. But I think that's where it all started.
That's good.
But my father had this thing, and you could buy surplus vehicles up there in Maine. So we always had a Willys. And then at one point, he had to have a snowplow, too. So he had this massive Dodge Power Wagon.
Oh, no wow. Kidding, yeah.
Really?
Which
yeah.
was killer.
Those are big right now.
Yeah, hard to find.
Those.
You know, the Willys were fun. I mean, they were crazy and they were jumpy. But I was driving, you know, as soon as I could reach the pedals, we always had, my brother and I would buy these old shitty VW Beetles because when you would get the thaw there and we would go in the spring, the road wasn't passable in a regular vehicle. So my dad, Dick Sepik, I think was the company, you'd get these these big tires, you know, these V-tread tires, and you'd chop the fenders off these VW bugs and put a TP manifold in them because they would, you know, otherwise they'd just
gunk up with
mud. And he had like 5,000 acres of land in Maine, and it was mostly old logging roads from the late 1700s, early 1800s. So you could drive for miles in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's great.
That's what we would do. Those were our dune buggies.
Yeah, yeah.
Motorcycles and mini bikes.
Oh,
but
wow.
My dad was a car, like literally, I remember him. You know, and he was a very established painter at that time, and his paintings were going for a lot of money. But I remember him trading paintings and prints sometimes for cars. So he always had a nice car. He usually had, like, I can't remember exactly the model, but a nice Mercedes diesel, British Racing Green, always the light, you know, the tan leather interior.
Sure.
But then he'd have, you know, F-150s that were all jacked up with snow plows.
And he was a landscape painter.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And he was an artist and an academic.
He's a painter. Right. Why? Yeah. It's so interesting.
It's great. Then we had an APC, which was really cool. We had a duck, a big, one of those big amphibious personnel carriers. And we would drive that. And it was far out. And my dad, for whatever reason, all those
work. We had
a
Buick. I had a Ford Granada.
Those work vehicles that he had.
My dad couldn't paint. That's why
he painted them yellow. He had this obsession.
Yellow.
Yeah.
Everything was painted yellow for military surplus.
Orange, snow, big V Viking snowplow, but you know it had the hard metal back on it, and you could literally drive those things through the woods.
Yeah. Right.
You know. And then we had a really big one that was six wheels. It was a massive.
Oh wow.
Pinsgauer.
Yeah. Huge. And I had a CB, I remember, and my brother and I drive that fucking thing through the woods.
That's an incredible childhood array of vehicles.
Crashing shit.
Yeah. Roads but, and vehicles.
Yeah, it didn't hurt the vehicles at all.
Right. Or anything else because there's nothing to hurt. Yeah.
There's nothing to hurt, but we used to drive that thing down into the lake, and that was our sort of party boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And we drive this big APC, sort of like a powder blue. And, you could fit like 20 people in that thing because it was, you know, those things were for driving troops on, but it was just such a gas.
That's awesome. What do you have these days? What has leaked into you drove up in the new Ford Bronco,
which is, yeah,
you love it.
Yeah. I love
Look
it.
At that. He's excited.
It's my new favorite vehicle. I think that I've ever owned. I had a 67 that I loved.
Does it drive better or the same?
Oh no, this car.
Joking, I'm joking.
Well, I got really lucky.
It's a two-door with the 2.7,
it's gorgeous. It's the first edition.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And it's, you know, you get in it and it you look at it and it still holds that aesthetic, which is tough because a lot of times they
nailed the design.
Do you see what he's replicated, though, when he's talking about this house in Topanga Canyon that's much like the house that he grew up with? Like he's,
right.
he,
and
he's
got military vehicles.
He's got the military.
Around,
he's got the
thunder.
Bronco, and now he's there. Yeah. He's recreating his.
I am regressing. I am regressing as a nearly 60-year-old man.
No, it's nice. I do a version of that up in the hills where I live on the west side of L.A., but I sought out peace and quiet that was similar to what I had. It wasn't as remote as yours in Massachusetts, but we had rivers and acreage and forests and canoes that we could retreat to, and it's important.
Near Brockton.
Near Brockton, yeah.
Did you have a Dairy Queen over there?
I wanted to ask you about that because I noticed like Ben Affleck puts you in a lot of his movies. How did you get together with him?
It's only because I can do the accent. He has no respect for me as an actor.
That was quite good. What you just did was quite good. Quite good.
Very good, yeah.
All right, well, forget about that. What are you collecting? Aside from this Bronco, do you have other stuff you're driving?
I've got my eye on... I've actually ordered another Bronco. I want a two-door, and I want the four-door convertible model.
Wow, you're in love.
I love this car, honestly. Wow, but I got to tell you, do you know what's going on with these vehicles?
I do very well.
People are losing their minds. So I go
24-month wait.
Yeah, with my girlfriend the other day.
Right, to get one.
She's got a Range Rover. I like Range Rovers, but I'm kind of like, eh. But she's English, so she's got to have that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then she saw my Bronco. She lost her mind, and she went, yeah, I really want, if I could have four doors. Oh, and a convertible. So I'm calling around. I'm finally find. They go, look, we've got, Ford sent us two of the four doors. They're all jacked up. They're loaners. They've got a couple thousand miles on them. So I say, you know, it's down the road from my house. So we beat it down there. And then they've got one in the showroom. Now, the sticker on that car is like $63,000. And I say, well, what about this model? And he goes, and we just sold it yesterday. And I go, oh, okay. What was it? And he goes, yeah, $100,000.
Yeah.
So now I don't know. I thought that was price gouging. I thought it was illegal.
Totally legal, but it is price gouging. Yeah.
But
totally,
it's legal.
Fully legal. Yeah.
But people are literally, when I talked to my broker guy who got my Bronco, he said, hold on to this car. I went, well, I don't want to let it go, and I want more of them.
Yeah, but yeah.
He went, because they'll hold their value, like the FJ Cruiser, which I had one of those. I eventually got sick of that car because my kids hated being in the back of it because you couldn't put the windows down. So they were always losing their minds and getting claustrophobic and car sick. This car, in that case, you would lay that by popping off those two front parts of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a killer car. Anyway, cars are hard to get anyway because of the whole COVID thing.
Yep. Supply chain's messed up, chip shortage, yep.
But my, I'm looking for a Porsche, so I want you guys to...
well, we have plenty right here. Garage. Yeah, we're here in Zuckerman's hangar,
which is, and there's tons of stuff.
As long as you got cash, Titus, I'll take it. What do you got in your pocket right now? My prices are at stupid high, and you're going to pay them.
That's the way Zuckerman talks.
I want a Porsche, and I want to have
if looking around
a
this room,
screen and an oil slick and machine gun.
You went right to the 67S.
Yeah.
There's a sand beige 67. 67S right behind us, and that's the car that you were gravitated towards when you first walked in.
Because my uncle had that, and he still has it to this day.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, British Racing green again with the light.
An old 911.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what I saw the other day, and I kind of lost my mind, was the Targa.
Oh yeah.
And those cars,
the new Targas are so.
They got kind of a bad. You remember the one I'm talking, like early 70s one?
Yeah. Well, they
with the T roofs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they thought that they weren't going to be able to do convertibles, and you know there was going to be a U.S. safety law, so they came up with the Targa has the metal roll hoop.
I loved that car.
Oh yeah,
and great. I saw one. I went, I might have to get one of those.
Oh yeah,
we can help you.
Yeah,
it was. We have an 82 right now. We could sell you.
It was orange. This one was orange.
Tangerine. We can do that. Signal orange. What are you? We got plenty of cars.
You know what? Spike the broker. Like, don't we have? Isn't there another warehouse next door?
I think
full of Porsche.
Yeah, there's some. They're floating around here. Anyway,
I think that car. I think that car, and of course you have the Ford up there, which just when I got my years in 2005, I got the first GT in LA County. It was a manual 6-speed Mustang GT, and of course I'm sitting watching television. And do you remember that commercial they did with McQueen in the cornfield? They go, build it and he will come.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's basically the Field of Dreams shit, but the guy makes
a track.
Yeah. And McQueen rolls out of the cornfield and gets in the car and they intercut all the clips from Bullet. And McQueen is my idol. And I saw that and I went, I just have to have that car. So I get the car, and then there were a lot of... you know, post-factory modifications, different transmission, front and rear suspension, put a six-pack on it. It came with a four-barrel, but, it's a V8, six-speed. And then suddenly I'm looking at this car, and it's not street legal anymore.
Right.
And I'm out of warranty. And then gas decided to become $7 a gallon, and I was only putting, high-performance 76 gas, because otherwise it would fart and burp if it was anything better than... Cristal or Dom Perignon going in that thing. And ironically, I know this is going to, you guys will spit in my face, but I sold the car and got a Prius.
Oh, yeah, I will too. Yeah.
My family has owned three of them.
Really?
I have many Prius.
I gotta go, guys. Later. It's been real. Yeah. No,
I rolled in the Prius, and then
my wife.
Oh,
not me. My wife. Yeah. But you were in an accident in that car.
I was in an accident,
and that's
car.
What led you to
and
selling it. Right?
It disintegrated.
Yeah.
I literally.
That's the reason I got out of it
bumper
too.
Bumper traffic on Chautauqua. I tapped. This girl was on her cell phone, and she almost hit the car in front of her. So she jams on her brakes. So I ass end her. She's in a Mini Cooper. Her car is fine. My Prius was destroyed, and I was maybe doing 5 miles an hour.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And I've got three kids. My daughter was very little at that time. She was 7 years old. And I went, I drove that car back and forth across this country to my place in Connecticut. And I can't say enough good things about it. We loved it.
Kind
of like a video game car.
Yep.
Playing
same
that little thing.
Story.
Let me see what I can do with the mileage.
I can say enough good things about it.
Let me drift. But. Then I went from that, and then I got an Audi all-road wagon because I had dogs.
I had one of those. Very nice.
That car
was
insane.
Yeah.
Incredibly fast.
Yeah.
And with those wide-ass tires, and it was heavy, you could do like a buck 10 in that thing, and you felt like you're doing 30. And then I did the S4, which was just a bullet. That thing was like a fucking TIE fighter. I mean, I would get in that car and just, you know, zip around.
Got to get you in an RS4, but yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Good, yeah. No, but drive like that guy that I go, what a dick. I was like, guess I wasn't looking in the mirror. And then I had a Mini Countryman trying to be practical. And then I just, my girlfriend went, yeah, you're not a Mini guy.
Yeah.
As much as she loved the Union
That's
Jack
good that
lights.
She had the courage to tell you that. There are lots of women who will not tell their husbands, I don't like what he's driving.
No, she told me.
Well, my wife tells me all the time she hates everything I'm driving, won't get in it. Yeah.
No, but there's this thing, if it's a car that emasculates you, to use this word from earlier, you know, when I was doing that car matchmaker show, we'd frequently get a wife or a girlfriend who said, I don't know how to tell him that he does not look right in this.
He doesn't
Prius.
Look.
Yeah. The Prius no, the it was a, it was that. What was that little Toyota truck? Little SUV. There was
RAV4.
The RAV4.
Yeah, yeah. No one looks right in a RAV4.
But
no.
this woman couldn't tell her husband. She goes, "He really, I'm losing interest in him sexually because of this."
Well, that's I like her. What's she doing right now?
It's the counter. She's married to me. That was the moment I took advantage of. Let me show you my 911.
That's the parallel to the. Do you see the 70-year-old dude in like Bergdorf Goodman trying on leather pants, and you want to go like, hey, man, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Just don't do it.
Titus, this has been great, but we're out of time. I'm so excited about the new show, Bosch Legacy.
Not as excited as I am.
It's going to be great. I'm going to buy the new book so I can read it before then.
I'll give it to you. I finished it.
Thank you so much for coming in and just hanging with us.
Thanks for having me on.
You didn't quite know who we were or what was up, but we couldn't be more excited to meet you. And maybe, you know, you come back sometime.
Yeah. When Bosch gets a new car, he's still driving that shitty Cherokee.
The Grand Cherokee.
I was pushing on the Bronco, and then what I realized from a practical standpoint was, because those cars are very few and far between at that time when we started production, I went, he would have that car, and maybe in the future he can have that car, but right now it's too new and it would stick out like a sore thumb. You know, if I was trying to tail somebody in my Bronco, they'd pull over and go, can I check out your car?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, good point.
And meanwhile, if you need a corpse, like a Jewish looking guy with a beard, Johnny
I'll know, child molester, I'm game. Well, he's,
I thought you were working as Manny Patinkin stand in.
Yeah,
but young Manny Patinkin.
Just put that in your head.
Mention
it to Devane.
I'll talk to Mark.
And we'll talk to Mark. Anyway, that's all we have for you guys.
I like you, Spike, suddenly.
We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.